It's time for another episode of the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast with your hosts, Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, Brad Tarver, and Jason Young.
Jim, did you get moved? You said you were moving last week.
I did get moved technically in that all of my stuff is not in the old location and it is in the new location, but it's all over the new location. None of it's where it's supposed to be. I had to like hunt down my mic stand and mic this morning so I could set up for the podcast. I slept on the couch because my bed is covered in stuff. Yeah, it's been a fun weekend. I think I'm going to like the new place. It's exact same as the old place with new appliances and a wall.
Yeah, I was going to ask how the new renovations compare in the new place compared to the old place.
Before, I was in a loft, and about a third of the way across, there was a wall that has a closet in it, but the two sides were open. And so what they did is they closed in one side of that, the closet. It's hard to explain, but there's a wall there now and a door. So I actually have a bedroom in my apartment along with the big living room, kitchen area. I think I'm going to like it. The new fridge is definitely bigger and nicer. The new sink, it's got like the deep sink with the nice water nozzle that kind of hangs down from the top that I've never had before. And so we'll see. I'm two floors higher than I was, so I'm on the 10th floor instead of the 8th floor. So maybe, not much of a different view. I know my body is sore today, so...
So I got to ask, did you invest in any zip ties or Velcro ties to take care of your cable management? Because in the last place, your home theater was like a rat's nest of cords. It kind of reminded me of Christmas.
It was story. A rat king.
Right. Like it reminded me of a Christmas story, plugging in the leg lamp.
I have a huge box of zip ties around here somewhere. The reason that was such a rat's nest is because it was like, add this, add that. And it got bigger than I was expecting too fast. And so I didn't organize it. So maybe when I set it up this time, at least the initial setup will be a lot better off. I did get all my Unify stuff in, but I haven't set it up yet.
Understandably, you got priorities. How's your internet since you've moved up to the 10th floor? Is it actually reliable now?
It has been. It seems like it's been reliable as much as I've been up here this weekend. Most of, the speed tests when they set it up look good. So we'll see if it has that like drop-off issue or if it stays pretty consistent.
Excellent. So are you using any of the Unify stuff or just you haven't set up the security gateway? Are you on that AP yet or what are you doing?
No, I'm still on my on hub that I had. I just plugged that in to get it going when the cable guy came on Thursday. Even that's been kind of a pain because it wasn't working on Thursday. And what I realized is I had to plug a laptop directly into the modem to activate the new modem. The guy came and set everything up and didn't tell me I had to go through activation again because I was, I just assumed I was going from the 8th to the 10th floor and I wouldn't have to activate. So I was trying to activate and then that wasn't working. So I had to call them and they still had me on my own hardware instead of their hardware. So they got that situation corrected. The problem with that is I had reset the on hub thinking it might have been a problem. So all my stuff changed. So the only things I've put on Wi-Fi are the two laptops, my phone and iPad. So the TV, Apple TV, I haven't plugged any of that stuff up yet. Yeah, I'm waiting for you to set up the Unify stuff before I add everything to the network. And I was going to do that last night, but then a friend called and wanted to go get some dinner. So I went out to dinner and then came home and passed out instead of setting that up.
So with all the talk that we've had about the Unify Security Gateway, I didn't have one. So I did go out and get the last one in Atlanta that I could actually find. And it was only $115, so not bad.
Yeah, I think that's about what I ended up giving for mine on eBay. I actually ended up buying it off eBay. I ordered one off Rakuten, ever how you pronounce that. 3 days after I ordered it, I get an email that says, oh, the person doesn't have them in stock, so we're canceling your order. So never ordering from them again. And then I found one on eBay. It came in late yesterday afternoon, so it was a pretty impressive turnaround for somebody off eBay. So props to them.
I haven't set mine up yet because I was sick this week. I had a bad cold, and it was just not a good week for me. The other thing was because I have the setup with the Gigafiber, their modems don't go into bridged mode. So you have to do this thing with like DMZ Plus, and it's a whole thing, and it kind of sucked. And the potential for knocking out my internet and then having to put it back the way that it was just already sick. It was just like, why do I want to do this? And I did some working from home because I was sick. So again, my stability of my internet connection was of paramount importance. So that's probably going to happen this afternoon. afternoon after we finish recording. I'm going to go and set that up. So I'm looking forward to that.
That was kind of my thought, too. I could have rushed through and tried to set all that up. But then if it didn't go right, you know, I got to have my internet. I'm probably going to take my antenna that I use for over the air and just plug it straight into the big TV today instead of going through the home run or whatever. Just plug the antenna straight into the TV just so I can watch football later.
All right, so speaking of football, who you got today?
I hate all four teams. How about that?
Nice.
I don't even want to watch, really. After the Saints game last Sunday, I really don't want to watch any football today at all because I know they're going to show that replay like a dozen times, and it's going to make me physically ill. So I don't even know if I'm going to watch. I want to watch, but I don't want to watch. That one play ruined football for me until like next August.
It was heartbreaking. So, Jason, you were having issues still with your Apple Watch. This has been like a recurring theme. You're having problems with the accuracy, and we think it was, what, the Milanese loop that was slipping on your wrist, or what? What's going on?
Yeah, so I'm not convinced that that is the problem, but I'm one of these people of, like, I don't want to keep sending them the watch back, and then them send me a new one, and it does the same thing over and over again. I ventured out stupidly on a Saturday night to the Apple Store at Mall of Georgia, picked up one of the dark olive sport loops that has like the Velcro closure on it.
That's the one I have too.
And yes, I mean, it's a good looking band. And so it seems to hold the watch in place considerably better. And since having done that, I've not gotten any weird readings yet. So my actual resting heart rate seems like it's up, which is good because it was too low. And I'm not looking down and seeing, you know, you were at 31 beats a minute 8 minutes ago, or 35 beats a minute 8 minutes ago kind of thing. Kind of sucks that I had to go buy a $50 band to fix a problem with the $200 band. But if that ends up being the case, then I'll just use the Milanese loop going out to dinner with the wife, or on occasions where I'm not actively tracking heart rate and those kind of functions.
I mean, you wouldn't wear the Milanese loop to the gym anyway, would you? I mean, I don't.
Every time I've been.
What?
What?
I'm a fancy man.
You have outfancied me, sir, and I didn't think that was possible.
I bought the stainless with the Milanese just because the only other way to get the stainless is to get the white sport band. And I knew I would never wear a white watch band. It just, I don't know, I just don't think I would like it at all. So I went ahead and paid extra and figured now I at least have the nice Milanese for, you know, if I'm going to get dressed up to go out. But I rarely use that band, very rarely.
Yeah, I found too that it's slippery a little bit. It pulls the hairs on my arm. I do like it. It is nice. I've used the knockoff one before the Milanese was a standalone band option, and I think it was 2015 they finally did it, and I really like it, but that green laser, it slips around too much. Even the steel link, I've found removing the right number of links to get it so that it's not uncomfortable also seems to interfere with it. So yeah, that actually is surprising. I'm honestly shocked. I didn't realize you wore the Milanese loop to the gym. That's wow, I did not know that.
Well, you are the incredibly shrinking Brian, too. So, I mean, every time you put that you know, Darth Vader band on, you probably got to take a link out of it.
I have had to remove links, and I keep them in a certain place, and I've nearly panicked when I was like, oh, did I throw that box away? And I have to go and I look, because you know that band's like a $500 band. I do not want to throw any piece or any part of that thing away, even if I myself will never use it. So it's kind of scary. But I'm glad that seems to have stabilized your issue, as I kind of figured it would, because that would make a lot of sense. I'm actually surprised you don't own one of the surprised you didn't own the you don't have the sport band when you go to the gym. Don't all the watches come with a sport band, or is it just
nope? Mine came with just the Milanese loop when I bought it.
Nope, that's like me. Yeah, that's why I went Milanese, because it's either Milanese or sport. So y'all like that Velcro one? Because I haven't bought one of those yet. Do y'all like that better than the sport one?
It feels real good on the wrist. It's nice and firm, but it has some flexibility to it. And so far, the material feels really nice. I saw a buddy who had one of the like eBay knockoff ones, and from a distance it looked nice, but like when you actually put it in your hand, you can tell why his is $5 and this one was $50. I wish the $5 one felt better. I would have loved just spending that, but needless to say, I got the good one.
When I go to the gym, the Nike band is the one that I use. I like the ventilation, and I like being able to keep it relatively tight so that I know that my readings are as accurate as possible. I'm not worried about the sweat or anything. Now, I know you can wash the bands, you can clean them, but it's just sort of like, I don't want to worry about it is how I view it with the exercise band. When I'm at home or if I'm at work and I'm just sort of like, bleh, I don't care, I'll usually wear this one. I'll sleep in this one too. It's very comfortable. It's like the equivalent of having a, it's like like the slippers. You know what I mean? There's no other way. It's very soft, it's durable, and it just feels great. So, and you can keep it as tight or as loose as you want it to, and you don't have to worry about it slipping. So it's very, very nice in that regard. But if, let's say I'm going out and I'm going to on a client site, I'll use the Milanese or the Steel Link or something like that, or maybe the a leather one that I have that's kind of a knockoff. Just around the house, I'll end up using the nylon band more often than not. It is a nice band. I like it a lot more than I thought I would.
Brad, you said you had a nylon as well?
Yeah, mine's just like Jason's. It's the olive, even though it looks gray. I don't know where they got the olive from. But yeah, the whole band is like the loop side of Velcro, but it's a very thick loop, so it's real soft to the touch. And then there's a little, the hook side is obviously on the underside of the band, and I guess it's about 2.5 inches long. So it gives you plenty of contact room if you have, I don't know, a 6-inch wrist, not that anybody would, but I've been using nylon bands for years just because I like the Maritac band so much. So it's not a big jump for me to go from one nylon band to another.
Well, I'm glad that got situated for you, Jason. Had a really weird situation with a coworker's iPhone this week. So last week when I was editing the show, strangely enough, a coworker texted me, said, I'm having a real strange problem with my phone, that it's awfully slow. And I'm thinking, wow, this is, what a coincidence with all the things that have come out lately. Long story short, I ended up having to connect to her computer remotely and having her plug in to iTunes to take a look at it. And this was not an iOS 11 type bug. She was still on 10.2.1 and she was on an iPhone 6. She would plug in and her phone would not back up at all. She couldn't back up to iCloud. Like, it was the strangest thing. So there was no way to force it to update. There was no way to even complete a backup. I ended up getting her to bring it into the office the next day and I did some troubleshooting on it. One thing we've mentioned before, and I really think Apple should do this, is give everyone some free iCloud storage beyond 5 gigabytes. Like, at a minimum, give people whatever the largest size of the phone is. Let's say 256 gigs of free storage would be really nice, because once she paid the $3 and got her, you know, 200 gigs of iCloud storage, she had a 16 gig phone, I might add. That was also, you know, she was running out of space locally. So I knew I was going to have to.
I mean, that would keep it from backing up or updating alone, just that alone.
She had absolutely exceeded her 5 gigs. But once she did that, we could at least get a backup to iCloud to complete. And this took forever for us to go ahead and iron out. But there was a thing on Daring Fireball a few weeks ago when they were talking about the slowdowns. And there was two things that I checked. There is an option. If you go inside of your settings and you go to battery, and this has been like this for a while, you'll see if the battery needs replacing or not, right? It'll tell you. And by Apple's standard, you have to hold at least 80% of the charge. If you can hold at least 80% of the charge, you don't need your battery replaced. So that's the first thing that I checked. This was not a battery problem. But on Daring Fireball a few weeks ago, Gruber had pointed out that when you have these issues, if you do a backup and restore, it often irons these things out. So I figured I would test that, and sure enough, that was the case. So once we got both a local encrypted backup and an encrypted backup to iCloud, I wiped her phone and did a restore, and for the last week, it has been completely fine, all issues solved. But she had tried doing it through Apple, and Apple was like, oh, you just have a knockoff cable from Verizon, that's your problem. And that was definitely not her I don't know what her problem was at this point, but it sure wasn't that. But I think it was storage related.
It was the Windows crud issue. Remember Windows crud, when you would slow down Windows after years? We're not supposed to have that problem with iOS, but it sounds like that's exactly what her issue was.
I can remember in the past going to the Apple store when I had a slow phone, and they would be like, well, your problem was you did a backup and restore, you need to set up as new. They used to say that. I don't know if that ever happened to you, but it definitely happened to me. And I was like, why? You know, and I've always resisted doing that. I've done it before, but I try not to.
I did that with my 10, and I don't ever want to do it again. I regretted it once I did it, because it took me like a week or a month or something to get everything set back up like it was. I mean, it was just, it seems like every time I launched an app, it was like, oh, I haven't set this one up yet. Oh, I haven't set this one up yet. So, yeah, I don't think I'll be doing it again.
So, I've had a couple battery problems. I think it was maybe the 5S and the 6 Plus or something. But and I went through the, you know, factory reset, restore, and they kept telling me, you know, something in my backup may be causing it or whatever. And then finally, I got the guy who's like, look, he goes, don't do a factory reset. He's like, set it to DFU mode, hook it to your Mac, download the newest version of the firmware, then restore from that. And sure enough, both times I had a phone that would die in the first 6 hours of the day that went back to being like brand new. I don't know what the magic voodoo was there, but it certainly worked for me. And luckily I was able to use the previous backup to restore from.
I think Apple's going to end up replacing a lot of batteries where they probably, I mean, I know they're going to run the diagnostic to check and see, but that was something that would have been a knee-jerk reaction of, oh, just change the battery. There's your problem. You have an iPhone 6. It's 3 years old. Hey, your battery's probably dead. But it wasn't a dead battery at all. It was absolutely backup and restore, unclog the pipe.
I'm sitting here laughing because I'm thinking Brian's a lot nicer person than me, because if a friend came to me and said my iPhone 6 was slow, I'd be like, yeah, get a new phone. That would have been my first suggestion. I'd be like, look, you could get a 7 or a 7S or an 8 or a 10. I mean, there's a whole lot right. of numbers after 6 that are out there now. Maybe you should do that.
Let me show you how to schedule a Genius Bar appointment.
Well, see, she had already called Apple and it hadn't worked out. And I thought, this is one of those things, too, where you get an issue and it's like, oh, this is a trivial thing to solve. Here, just back it up and restore it. And on the path to that, it's like, the backup's not working. It's like, what do you mean it's not working? Oh, she was using her work laptop to back it up and it was still Windows 7, which I need to have a talk with her about that and get her on Windows 10.
So you mean my corporate laptop that's on Windows 7 is a bad thing?
We just had that edict come down within the last, I don't know, 3 weeks, right when Spectre and Hector dropped, whatever their names were.
Yeah, we've been told it's coming for us as well.
Yeah, when those came out, we finally had the edict, the email out, hey, if you still have a laptop with Windows 7 on it, please notify IT and we'll get you swapped out. I don't know what percentage of people were, but I do know a lady on my team still had Windows 7. And when she contacted them, they told her, okay, it'll be a little bit because there was more than we thought there was out there.
I don't even know how we still have a laptop in my small company that's running Windows 7, but we'll take care of that. So I thought that was funny. The most surprising thing to me was that she was still on iOS 10.2.1, which was over a year old, I think, at this point, or right at a year old. I remember running the 10.3 betas like in December of 2016 because I wanted the Wi-Fi calling enabled at the time. So I know it's old.
Say, haven't there been some of the mandatory dot releases, like where they push it on you whether you like it or not since then?
I guess not. Not if you only have like a gig left on your phone and you can't get it downloaded, I suppose. But see, I thought they addressed that with doing the app offloading. That was the other thing I did for her too, was there's a couple of settings in iOS that, you know, you should enable if you have a smaller size phone, which is the app offloading, where it'll take your older apps and you'll see a little cloud icon beside them and they're not really on your phone, but if you touch them, they'll re-download them. And I also did the photo offloading so that her higher resolution photos will be stored in iCloud, but lower resolution copies would be stored on the phone to free up a little more space. So those are both in your iCloud settings.
With a phone that old, it was more commonplace to see those 16 gig models. So it wasn't uncommon for someone to have that, because your only choices back then were, if you got the 99 cent one, if you were on AT&T, for example, you know, you get the 8 gig and then your other choices were 16 and 32. So
that's true, Brad. I mean, she actually had an upgraded, like that wasn't even a base level 6 probably, so. I had this thought this week. I was, you know, looking at the Apple news. All the rumors kind of kicked up this week. You know, there's going to be a new iPhone 10, or they're going to stop making the 10 and they're going to make two new models that do this, or they're going to make something that does that. And the first thought in my head was, damn it, I just got this $1,000 phone and they're already going to come up with something that much better this year. And then like 2 seconds later, I was like, oh yeah, I'm on the upgrade plan, so I'm getting whatever comes out.
I just return it every September. That's the way I look at it.
That's how I felt when I got my MacBook, because I have the late 2016 MacBook Pro, and then within 6 months they came out with a new model with a new chipset and all that stuff.
Just do what Jim did and baptize it in Sprite and you'll get a new one for no cost.
It's not worth the risk. I mean, because they didn't have the AppleCare Plus on the MacBooks when I got mine. And if I did that, they'd be like, oh, we don't cover accidents. Sorry.
$700, sir. I mean, that's exactly what happened to me. You know, I mean, it was the guy felt bad that, you know, they didn't have the accident insurance when I got mine and they wanted $700 to basically fix a keyboard. And, you know, he was like, all right, we're just going to let you swap it out. So, I mean, yeah, I got super duper lucky. No doubt about it.
You just gave him the puppy dog eyes, and they were like, oh, it's okay.
No, he just started bawling his eyes out uncontrollably and, like, hyperventilating, and they just, all right, would you like a new MacBook? Yes, sir. Okay. And that, I don't blame him. I would have totally done the same thing.
We have a red alert. We have a 45-year-old man in that is sobbing uncontrollably.
Please fix my keyboard.
You know, the kind of crying where the drool just comes out of your mouth and you see it like sticking between your lips and it's just like, what are we going to do?
Snot pouring out of your nose.
Snot coming, yeah, snot too.
Yeah, yeah. So on a somewhat related note, iOS 11 has a lower adoption rate. So Renee Ritchie tweeted this week the adoption rate for iOS 11 versus previous numbers. And they're probably the lowest since, I think, iOS 8. I think that's right, which is like 65%. So the thing that I immediately thought of, though, is the more iPhones and iPads that you sell, getting everyone to the latest release, even though it's available and they can do it and it's free, I don't think it necessarily reflects on the OS. It's just a higher percentage of people that are iOS devices that are out in the wild. Those numbers are going to kind of go down over time, you know, just the way that it is.
Yeah, I mean, my first reaction was, no duh, right? Math is hard. So there's still a ton. I guarantee you there are iPod Touches out there that were original models. There are original iPads and iPad 2s that are out there, you know, that can't be upgraded, but that are still perfectly good devices, whether that's, you know, a device for listening to music or using it as an e-reader or whatnot. You kind of got to caveat those numbers, right? Because again, next year, there's going to be even more devices that probably won't be supported by iOS 12, and maybe that number's even lower. So I think the nice thing about these devices, right, is I'm sure that my nephew is still using my 2007 or 2008 iPod Touch that I gave him 6 years ago.
So the way I look at it is they come out with a new version of iOS every year, and the more versions you have out there, the more versions you have crammed into that not on the latest version percentage, you know, like here it's 65 and 35. So that 35 is made up of 10 versions of iOS. Now, obviously one small, two small, three, you know, and it gets just a little bit more. But every year you're cramming more versions into that, not into the latest version end of the spectrum. And so, I mean, I think it's reasonable to expect. The other thing that might help here is with all these people running out and getting battery upgrades and their phones maybe not getting slowed down, maybe they'll actually upgrade to 11, because I know that spooks a lot of people as far as if their phone's already slow, they don't want to upgrade it.
So Apple says they're going to release an update that will allow users to disable battery throttling, the same thing that's been so controversial. They did mention that they had told people when they released this. I didn't recall hearing it when they talked about the being able to prioritize the processes. But I don't think this is a good idea at all. I think this is going to end badly. The same type of situations they were trying to avoid. I had my phone rebooted while I was in the middle of a call, and it was an important call. It's like, well, yeah.
It's just going to make it too visual and too accessible. You know, there's information about your battery and other internal processes in your phone that the common person just doesn't need to see.
Agreed. I almost see this as there's stupid warning labels on everything.
Tide Pods.
Tide Pods are known by the state of California to cause death when you eat them. So I think this is kind of a similar thing of, you know, I think I heard that there were already 23 class action lawsuits against Apple, and those are just kind of the ones that are out in the public that we know about. So this could be just kind of a mitigating control for them before anything even hits a courtroom to say, okay, yeah, we had this feature for the good of the customer, and now we're giving the customer the opportunity to turn our good feature off.
I was right in the middle of a Pokemon raid and my phone just shut down, you know.
That's actually more likely to happen than anything. I think. That would be an app that would kill it.
Yeah, it was like, you know, a high-powered app, you know, sucking a lot of bandwidth, a lot of graphics. And then, you know, we're going to get people complaining about that too. Give it 6 months and people are going to start doing that and turning on this feature or turning off this feature. And we're going to see reports about iPhones are rebooting. You know, what's Apple going to do about this now?
And Apple says, well, we tried to tell you.
It's the old you're going to shoot your eye out thing, right? I mean, it's, you know, it's going to happen. Just wait until somebody does it.
It's going to be the lawsuit mitigation setting. So it was 10 years ago this week that the MacBook Air was announced. And what are your thoughts on this, guys? I mean, to me, this is my favorite laptop that Apple has ever released, even though it's not the best by a long shot.
I remember when the device came out, and I was working at a law firm at the time, and there was probably about 10 partners in that law firm that all walked in within the same week and an unopened MacBook Air in their hand and were like, set this up. And we weren't even supporting MacBooks or Macs yet within our network. So I mean I definitely remember when they came out, and we have a couple in our house, and my wife loves hers.
I bought the original for my ex-wife back then, and I remember it being really slow. Is what I remember about it. The original one,
it actually had a hard drive. It did not have.
It was really slow. Slow processor, slow hard drive. Fast forward to one of the laptop that I was using 3 years ago as my personal laptop was the 11-inch version of that. because I'd bought that to replace that laptop for her, but then she got a laptop for work. So I started using that 11-inch MacBook Pro or a MacBook Air. I love that little thing. It was great until, you know, I needed a little bit more power when I got my new job and was using my own thing. But yeah, I love that little 11-inch MacBook Pro. It's amazing how far it came from when they first came out. It was just dreadfully, painfully slow to use, but it looked gorgeous, to a really nice machine eventually that was both, you know, fast and gorgeous.
So I'm pretty nostalgic on that version as well. So I had just kind of warmed up to the Apple ecosystem. I think I'd gotten my first iPod Touch, did not own a MacBook at the time, but really thinking about getting one, which I did end up getting a 2008 MacBook Pro 17-inch that year. But I guess it was special enough to me, and I had kind of just bought into the ecosystem enough that we actually ended up naming our dog Mac. You know, kind of a neat story there, and he'll actually be 10 years old next month. So kind of reflecting back on that. Now our joke was, Mac is a German short-haired pointer. You know, those are considered a working dog, a hunting dog. So my joke back then during the I'm a Mac, I'm a PC commercial was, you know, when people would meet him, I'd say, you know, they'd say, well, what's your dog's name? I'd say, well, he's Mac. And they're like, oh, okay. And I said, I used to have a dog named PC, but he didn't work. But
I'm bumch.
So that original Air, I sold it to a guy that worked at Starbucks down in Waxahachie, where I was living at the time when we were replacing with her. I just remember I sold it to him, and he was going to give it to his mom because she just basically needed an internet browsing machine. And so that's where that one went. I hadn't even thought about that until just now when we were talking about it. I'm like, what happened to that Mac?
I still have my original one on my desk behind me over here where I had replaced the battery. It's from 2011, I think, is when I first got mine.
And I think the X is still using the 11-inch that I had. I got a 13-inch MacBook Pro and gave her that 11-inch, and I think she's still using it.
The best thing about it to me was the amount of power that you had versus the amount of weight that you had. So to take it back when I had it as a corporate laptop for the first time, I used to have the developer model of a laptop at my former job. And that thing was like, when I was a kid, being a super nerd, I would bring my books home every day, and I had a backpack that would have given Schwarzenegger like a back hump. Like, it was heavy, and it felt like that when I would take that laptop home every day from work. It felt like I was a kid back in like fifth grade with this canvas bag filled with rocks on my back. Like, it was just so heavy. So I remember when I changed that out, there were plenty of times that I would leave work and I would think, is my computer even in here? And I would have to stop and look, oh yeah, that computer is in there. It weighs a pound and a half or something. It was very, very nice, and I liked that a lot. Plus, I could actually use my computer all day long, 8 hours without plugging in, whereas with the other previous corporate laptop, I could go about 45 minutes and then I was on like reserve power. It was terrible.
Yeah, those developer laptops just tend to be desktop replacements.
Yeah, I remember doing those, like the big 17-inch or even the like 15.6-inch big Dell Latitudes.
Let's see what else is happening. So last week we talked about how the newsflash availability is in the newest version of iOS. You don't even have to be on the beta. Have you guys tried that out yet?
I did try it out the other day. I liked it. It was pretty cool. I'm going to probably try a different source. So it initially started with NPR, which I don't have anything against NPR. I just, they've never been where I got my news from. And so I told it to switch to Fox News, and in doing so, yeah, I know. So in doing so, like, it gave me a ton of like more business news. Like, I wanted more like world news, right? So tell me something about sports, tell me something about finances, tell me something about weather or whatever. And it was more like, you know, this stock is up and this is down. And it just wasn't quite what I was looking for. So I'm going to try some of the other options and see. But as a general concept, I like it a lot.
I'm just going to say, I'm ashamed to say that I have not tried it yet. It's just been a crazy, crazy week or two for me, so I haven't plugged it in. And I'm the one that always talks about using my Echo Dot for this all the time, and I still haven't even tried it on the phone. But I look forward to trying it.
I will bet you in the same amount of time Jim has asked his Echo Dot for the news brief, plenty of times with his phone sitting right there that could have done the same thing.
I know.
Just scrape that Amazon icon off of it and slap Spotify on it, and... Jim doesn't have an Echo. He has a Spotify device.
Well, what this kind of reminds me of is, what was that great news app that came out when the iPad first came out? I think it was...
Flipbook?
No, not Flipbook. Anyhow, they ended up having like their own journalism department, and like they were a completely, I think, separate spinoff of one of the media moguls, maybe Murdoch or somebody. Unfortunately, it went under after about 2 years, but every morning they had like a really nice 3 to 5 minute, here's what's happening in the world kind of video. So it was kind of like listening to that without, you know, actually seeing them.
By the way, thanks for putting me onto the Up First podcast, you guys, too, because I was not familiar with it, and I subscribed this week, and I'm kind of digging it.
Yeah, it's a pretty sharp little podcast. I mean, you know, quick 15 minutes every day. Good stuff. Like I said, they cover a wide variety of topics. So
the reason I bring the news brief up is that the FCC finally finalized the specs on the HomePod, so we could be seeing it pretty soon. So it's probably going to debut before, I'd probably guess, by what, April maybe at this point? If they would seem to indicate that the shipments are starting to gear up and it's starting to get ready. Again, not that I'm probably going to get one right out of the gate, but I know I always say that and then I do, but I'm sticking to that this time. I'm not going to do that this time.
Yeah, me either. I mean, it's kind of crazy. I remember how excited I was when they announced that. And now, what are we, not even 6 months later? I've gotten the new TV. I've gotten the big Sony soundbar set up. I don't really feel like I have the need for one now like I did then. Like, you know, my plans for what I was going to use it for. So I'll definitely hold off and definitely check it out in the store and see what I'm going to do.
I do wonder how they're going to set that up in Apple stores for people to see them or try them out, because it's not going to be in an ideal setup. You're going to have something like they had at the announcement where there's some sort of acoustics. You're not really going to be able to see the benefit like you would unless you had some sort of isolated area in which to test it, I think. But I don't know. I have an unused Google Home and an unused Echo Dot sitting next to me. I say unused. They're both plugged in, but I seldom use them for anything. So I don't know. I see folks wanting the functionality, but I don't know. I haven't found a good way to incorporate it into my workflow like some of you guys have. So that being said, there is there's a great episode of the Vector podcast that came out a couple of weeks ago, and I'm going to put a link to it in the show notes, where they have an interview with a guy and they talk about why Siri needs to be a platform. And I absolutely loved this episode. Lots of insights about the SRI Labs before Apple bought it, the things that Siri could do then that it can't do now. It is very, very good. And how, in this person's estimation, Apple made a big mistake not buying Viv, which was the next thing that the Siri guys did that Samsung ultimately bought, and I think have turned into Bixby, their personal assistant. So very, very interesting episode. You really should take a listen to it. You'll be surprised and disappointed, because it really drives home how Apple seems to be missing an opportunity here that Amazon is really capitalizing on. And the last point I'll make about it, or 2 points I'd like to make about it, and then I'll let it go, is that normally, you know, Apple never goes to CES, but normally it feels like Apple dominates CES because it's all these devices that work with, you know, HomeKit, or all these devices that work with iOS or whatever. This year it was across the board Amazon, Amazon, Amazon. Everything was Alexa this year. That's kind of interesting to me. And the person, the guest on this podcast, speculates that Apple is sort of facing the innovator's dilemma right now that they normally are pretty good about avoiding, in that, you know, oh, we're going to treat this like it's not that important because the iPhone generates all of our revenue and the iPhone has still got a lot of legs in it. So we're just going to focus on that. And they may be missing the boat in the same way that Microsoft was late to the game on the internet, for example, or what have you. So,
or mobile.
Yes, that too. Totally missed the boat on mobile.
First off, I just want to point out how bad the name Bixby is for a personal assistant. I don't know. Come on, Samsung. You could do better than Bixby. I can't. Bixby. Bixby, Bixby, Bixby. I mean, that just, whoever's got one of these things out there, your device just went nuts when I just said that. But I agree. I haven't listened to the podcast, but I do think there's a whole lot that Apple could be doing with Siri and should be doing with Siri that it's not, because they're trying to protect their own kind of IP and their own devices, and like Apple does. I definitely think it's Amazon when it comes to this stuff. They'll hand this stuff out to anybody because it's not their primary business. Their primary business is getting their assistant and their shopping network, or, you know, whatever, onto any and every device it can. You know, that's how they operate. And Apple's quite the opposite. So, you know, I can see where somebody would say that what Amazon's doing is the way to go. But they also have a different end game. So, you know, we'll see which one of those turns out to be correct.
I think there's two things to consider, too, why it hasn't taken off like I really wish that it would. One, if you're making an app, right? You can decide how that app is going to look and function. You have complete control over the interface. If you're designing something to work with Siri, assuming that Apple's even opened it up so that you can, you don't really have any control over the user interface. And I'll give you an example of what I mean. If you have something like the Cash app, we've all used the Cash app prior to the iMessage integration to send money back and forth. So we've sent each other money before using that. If I go into the app, it's the same for you as it is for me. We can navigate it, no problem. If you're doing it with the Siri integration, I can say, you know, shoot Brad $10 or shoot Jim $50 or whatever, but it may or may not work. It may try to use my PayPal integration. Like, it's not a consistent experience yet, I guess, is the thing. You have to, it's like invoking a spell or something, and it, instead of being able to naturally and intuitively navigate it. And I still think that even that Amazon still has that problem too, and they all do at this point. It's not natural language. It doesn't quite understand. That's got to be frustrating for a developer of you can't really control the UI experience, so to speak, because it's not consistent every single time. If you tell your thing to turn on the lights or turn off the lights, you may have to change your phrasing a couple of times to get it to do what you want it to do. And that's just not acceptable for a lot of people. Not to mention the fact that every year, Apple only opens up a little bit more and a little bit more. I thought it was great when I could finally call an Uber or Lyft using Siri. And I thought, wow, this is really cool that I can send money with it. But they really need to open that thing up across the board and let people do what they do. When they open these things up, people will do things that they aren't even expecting with it. I wish they would do that. It's really frustrating.
And all those things change. I mean, the keywords can kind of morph over time. And if you're an app developer, you could have some key feature in your app that's doing something, then all of a sudden one day it just doesn't work, or, you know, just stops working. You've got to have some sort of more complete API that you know is going to be standard. And haha, Brad, I get $50. You only got 10.
Well, I think we're going to have a short episode this week. There's not really that much going on. You guys have anything you wanted to discuss?
No, man, you cannot skip the one thing that just made my blood boil this week.
All right, let me guess what that is. So BMW is going to make CarPlay a subscription service.
What the hell, BMW? How freaking ridiculous is that?
Read the article. It's cheaper.
It is not cheaper. This is a one-time, like, there is no ongoing cost associated with a head unit. You buy the technology one time, it's yours, you keep it. Now, whereas, like, Sirius XM, that is a service that you are consuming that you should subscribe to. I get that. But CarPlay is not a service. I'm not getting, it's not like Siri is a service. Siri is built into my phone. You are using my phone to enhance your car. So if anything, you should be paying me a freaking royalty for owning an iPhone that you get to put cool stuff in your car as a selling feature to other people. I was seriously thinking about in a year or two, you know, possibly getting rid of both of my vehicles, which are my Navigator is 16 years old, my BMW 540 is 19 years old, right? I was thinking about getting rid of both of those and just going to like one of the new 5 series on a, you know, couple year lease. And I don't care that the first year is free and that if I only did a 2-year lease, it would only cost me $80. It's the principle behind it. I guarantee you, if this is a service, there are people who are BMW purists, and I wouldn't call myself a purist, but I am a fan of the product that they put out. I think my E39 540 is just a crazy awesome car. And I'm telling you, I would walk. I would go look at Benz. I would go look at Audi. I would go look at, yeah, I mean, seriously.
Get off my lawn. Get off my lawn. Listen at him. It's cheaper. And I think we've even discussed on this podcast that, and I didn't realize you had a BMW that old, but I think we've discussed here that you probably don't want a BMW that's older than 3 or 4 years old on a lease, because the damn thing starts costing you so much that there is an associated yearly fee with BMWs after year 3 or 4, you know, and it's called the ignition system and the tires and the fuel system and everything else associated with the BMW that starts dying after year 3 or 4. So,
you know, the BMWs that I'm really a big fan of are like the E39, which is my series, the E36, and the E46. So during the time that they were making those cars, they were really good cars. Everybody knows exactly what goes wrong on those cars. And because they went wrong so frequently, they're now better than OEM aftermarket parts. that you can get that, you know, you replace it once and it doesn't happen again kind of thing. So like, you know, going into buying one of these older BMWs, what you may be looking at on a replacement perspective. And I agree, right? The new ones. But so let's say that, you know, 5 years from now that, you know, so let's say that the 2018 BMW M5, which is like 120,000, let's say that 5 years from now, it's 40,000. I might want to buy that car. And if I did, I'd probably hold on to it for 8 or 10 years, but because, you know, it's going to be an amazing car. Well, I don't want to have $800 invested in yearly fees to own CarPlay for 10 years on a then 13-year-old car.
Do you really think you would use CarPlay as it is today, 6 years from now? I mean, I think that's one of the issues.
Don't you diminish my argument, sir.
I think it's really odd for them to charge something as a subscription service that really no other manufacturer is doing. I'm afraid of the precedent it sets. Apple wants people to adopt this thing. And if you're selling it as an extra thing, then it's going to be one more impediment. As someone who has closely watched the number of vehicles, like, please, please start supporting this already. It hasn't been a tiny list, but it hasn't been nearly the adoption that it should be at this point. So to see a manufacturer add an impediment to it, this is a selling point for the vehicle. Like, if you have it, I'm more inclined to buy it. But if you don't, I'm less inclined to buy your vehicle and I'll buy someone else that has it. Also, too, the other thing to remember, I can't speak to the BMWs, but I know for Mercedes that trying to replace the native head unit with some aftermarket something is it's a pain, right? Because so much of what they do is integrated into that head unit that, you know, if I want to control some of the features on my vehicle, I have to do it through the head unit. So I couldn't just go and yank it out. Now, we talked about that Alpine last week that fits sort of like over the top of. But again, it feels silly if you already have like a 7-inch display in your vehicle that should be capable of doing this to replace it with a 9-inch display that sits on top of it. It just seems sort of like, why am I doing this? So I'm right there with you on that. I hope Mercedes does not do this as a fan of Mercedes.
Did BMW ever give like a reason why they're doing it? Like, are they offering something extra?
So what they claim is today they only support CarPlay. And up until, I think they're still the only manufacturer that does wireless CarPlay in like a single model that they offer. But they didn't offer Android Auto. So they were like, well, we're going to now support CarPlay and Android Auto. So now we give you a choice in case you change phones, you have an additional technology to support. I would have to check and see, but I don't know I doubt that they're paying anything to Apple or Google for the benefit of offering this stuff. It just doesn't seem like it's going to help them sell vehicles. I don't know why that they would want to place a barrier. Well, I guess, you know, hey, if people will pay for it, let's charge and see what happens. But it seems stupid.
The awesome $399 Sony head unit that I have in my BMW that I put in recently says otherwise. It does both CarPlay and Android Auto. So, like, there can be no argument there, right? Now, if they were, like, truly innovating something on Android Auto or CarPlay that nobody else had, I could see commanding a higher premium in the technology package for it. But to charge $80 a year, that's just... And what's to say that that price doesn't go up next year or the next year?
As someone who uses CarPlay every day, I can tell you it is not worth $300 a year because it's basically a mirror of your display. And it's really, and I say that as a diehard Apple fan, it's not worth it. So I hope they don't follow suit with other manufacturers.
I'm giving Jason crap, but I definitely agree that it's really stupid they're charging for this. But at least they do come out and say, look, if you're in a 3 or 4 year lease, a 3-year lease, then it's actually end up cheaper than paying the $300 up front because they charge $300 for the feature, and then you pay in free the first year, then what, $80 and $80 for the year 2 and 3.
But why would you want to punish people who are just going to buy the car and maybe drive it for, in Jason's example, you know, 8 to 10 years? I mean, that's not uncommon for people to keep a car that long.
Right. No, I agree. I'm that's what I'm saying. I think it's stupid that they're charging for it. You know, I'm kind of just trying to play the devil's advocate here. But that is kind of ridiculous that, I mean, back to Jason's original point is, you know, you're charging for something that it's just built in here. It's like charging for navigation in a car where after year one, okay, your navigation's going to stop working. You know, nowadays it's you have to pay for an update if you want to update your nav, but it doesn't stop working. It still works.
You know, you've just spurred something in my mind here. So I'm a big Mercedes fan. When I got mine in my first one in 2008, I think, you know, back in those days, the navs weren't, it wasn't common to get your updates over the internet. So their revenue stream there was to sell you an updated DVD every year for like $200 or $300.
Yep, I remember that.
Then I got my next one in 2014, and I think it was less common, but they were starting to do it over the internet. So when I got my GLE this past year, the one thing that I noticed was so many of those services they used to charge extra for are now built into the cost of the vehicle, so that if you want the navigation, if you want the ability to lock and unlock, start and do the remote start and all of that, as long as you had like a 2016 and up, it's built into it. You can use it for free for 5 years or something like that, which for even if you're not doing a lease, if you were doing a lease, you'd be covered. If you were buying it, typically, you know, if you're on a 5-year plan, by the time it's paid off, you can decide if you want to keep it or not. So I kind of get that. But I think what they're seeing is that phones, smartphones specifically, have eroded that market that they used to rely on. Nobody in their right mind would go and pay them for updated navigation. Like, even if they charge that as a feature, who's going to pay for it when you have Waze, Google Maps, and Apple Maps on your phone that are better and updated in real time than anything that they're going to provide you?
Right. I mean, that DVD you bought is already old when you buy it. As soon as they come out with it,
yes,
it's already old. Exactly. I mean, I have navigation in my Acura that I bought in 2015, I think it was. Yeah, that's when I bought the Acura. I can't remember the last time I've used the navigation in my Acura. I honestly can't. You know, it's Waze or Google Maps for me, you know, depending on where I'm at. So, yeah, it's there. I mean, I use the map, just, you know, the map will be displayed on there, just kind of a general, it's on the screen, it's a nice big screen there, but I don't actually ask it to tell me how to get anywhere.
Yeah, so that's probably what they're trying to do. They've seen that erode. I know a guy who actually works for the company that provides the telematics to Mercedes. It's got to be a rough business to see that entire business model get eaten away by smartphones. So I guess that's where they're coming from, but it still seems as an unwise move. And I hope other manufacturers don't follow suit, because that would set a bad precedence. And it would really hamper the adoption, if not kill CarPlay or Android Auto altogether. And that would be a shame.
Do you remember when the first nav apps came out for iOS like 10 years
ago?
Oh,
my goodness. TomTom.
TomTom and the other one. And they were like $60, or you could, you know, you could maybe $100, but you could pay $40 if you only wanted like the Southeast United States maps, or you could pay $40 for the West, or the $100 for all the maps, and they had a yearly update fee, and now Waze is like, please take me for free. You know?
Each of the updates was a gig or more, which I can remember 7-8 years ago when I had that, over a 16 meg connection or whatever it was, like something ridiculous. Those updates took forever to go and apply.
My dad is still a heavy user of Navigon. And to his defense, it is probably one of the best looking navigation apps. The 3D mapping with elevation and all that, like he just likes the looks of it. Whereas me, I just plug into Waze. Waze has,
I like the correct streets.
And now Navigon, I think, is owned by Garmin now. So he gets some pretty regular map updates there. And luckily for me, like 8 years ago, they ran like a Black Friday deal where you could get the whole US for $29. So and they've never charged an upgrade fee since that. So we've had Navigon, I think, since either the 3GS or the 4. But anyhow, I digress. Waze is still my go-to girl. I don't care what she tells me to do. I follow it blindly, and I have never had a bad experience on Waze. I have had it take me through some sketchy neighborhoods and industrial parks I didn't know existed, but other than that, she's good.
Yeah, but you got there faster, didn't you?
Definitely.
I've had bad experiences on all of them.
So this reminds me, and I'll have to drum up the link. It's something I saw on Apple News this week. There's a city in New Jersey that's going to start fining people for driving through that city during rush hour times if you don't live there or work there, because apps like Waze are redirecting them. If like some bridge is down or something is that's like messed up, Waze is redirecting tons of traffic through this small city between like Jersey and New York City. And they're actually passed a law there to where you can be ticketed if you don't have a certain pass to be driving through that city during certain hours of the day. I'll have to find the link.
So they're going to cross-reference every license plate that passes over a certain area?
You'll have like a toll tag type thing where it'll be in your window that you're allowed to drive there. And yes, it does seem illegal. That was one of the big things was ACLU or something was complaining about it, that, you know, that they could pinpoint people, or, you know, they could pull over people that, you know, they can, what do they call it when you, like, I don't even, can't think of the word, when you...
Profiling,
you know, cars or whatever. But yeah, so it, because of apps like Waze that are redirecting them to surface streets going through this city, they're saying it, like, in some places it takes people an hour to get out of their driveway because, you know, traffic is backed up because everything is, you know, being pulled through there.
You just need to be a more aggressive driver. If it takes you that long to get out of your driveway, you got problems, and it's not traffic.
This seems weird to me because if public streets are that, they're public. There's no restriction on who can drive on them, so I have a feeling that would be... First of all, let me just say, I'm not surprised New Jersey would do something like that. But second, this is something that can't last long. So that would be shocking.
Yeah, I'll find the link and send it to y'all. And it's just some city, like the George Washington Bridge or one of those bridges up there ends up getting backed up and something diverts through the surface streets. And that was what the story was about, you know, that basically the town is imposing like a $200 fine.
You know, about 10 minutes from where I live, there is a little... subdivision, and it's not even really a subdivision, it's just a street that has houses on it. To call it a subdivision would be a misnomer, because subdivisions are planned. There's usually one or two entrances or exits into that subdivision. This isn't even a subdivision, it's a big street that connects two other streets together. And for years they have had a sign that says absolutely no through traffic, and every time I drive through there going wherever I want to go, I always kind of looked at that and I was like, how can you impose such a thing on a public street? You don't own it. It's not private property. My taxes paid for it just as much as anyone else's. You can't tell me that I can't drive on a public street. You just can't. So that's the thing that's sort of weird here.
Well, it kind of goes back to the difference between rules and laws. So there are lots of places that post things that are their rules, but they have no founding in the law whatsoever. So case in point, our neighborhood. Now, our neighborhood has a policy of no street parking. Well, it's a public street, right? We are not a private gated community, so it is a public street. And in Forsyth County, Georgia, you can park on the street as long as you're not, you know, blocking traffic or whatnot.
Street parking annoys me to no end. Like, I love when I drive through my neighborhood and I see people with empty driveways and their cars where I have to drive around them where they're on the street. It pisses me off. Like, it makes my head want to explode.
Same here, man. So, but the one thing that we do have is we've got an HOA that, you know, by you moving in here, you agree to, you know, live by the rules of the HOA. So luckily ours is, it's a $50 a day fine that continues for every single day that you do it.
My neighborhood does not have an HOA, which I thought was a great thing when I moved in, but there's a certain house that lives on the choke point to my circle. And I swear, this house has two driveways. There's four cars in each driveway, and they still park on the street. And I really wish we did have something like that, because the revenue we could generate off of that one house would drive you nuts. It's insane.
Well, at least our HOA is kind of reasonable in that, like, you know, I had a small gathering of coworkers at my house for, you know, like a small unofficial Christmas party. And all I have to do is, like, I sent them an email with a specific form that said, you know, between the hours of 6 p.m. and 11 p.m., I'm expecting 8 to 14 adults, which could result in 6 to 8 cars, and they'll all be parked on the same side of the road, and I'll stuff as many as I can in my driveway. And, you know, within a couple hours, I got approval for it. So if you let them know for a short-term event, you're not going to get hit with fines. So I'm completely okay with that.
Ugh, the suburbs. God, guys. Here you just put money in the meter if you want to come see me.
Here you have to pay to park your own vehicle at home. So yeah, that's your issue there, Jim.
I get a bargain. I'd $70 a month, I get covered parking. So I found the article. It's Leonia, New Jersey, a small town in the shadow of the George Washington Bridge,
will start fining commuters $200 starting, it was supposedly January 15th, and it in hopes that the legislation will force apps to remove their side streets from the algorithm or alert drivers that cutting through could cut into their bottom line.
I can't wait for the first lawsuit to the city for doing something like that. But what do you get from the state with no left turns and you can't pump your own gas?
Is New Jersey like New Orleans where they don't have left turns either?
Correct. It's all jug handles, man. You got to turn into the jug handle.
Okay. Yeah, I'm used to that in New Orleans, but I guess I've never driven in New Jersey, so.
I've had the pleasure many times for my former employer.
Well, I'm glad that added a little bit to the show there. We've got a we segued that very well into some current events.
All right, that should do it for this week, fellas. Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Later, fellas. Later, fellas.
Please visit InfiniteLoopBack.com for show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter. We're at InfinLoopBack. That's at I-N-F-I-N LoopBack. I'm Brian B. That's at B-R-I-A-N-B. Jim is at Big Jim. That's at B-I-G-J-I-M. Jason is at J-S-N-Y-N-G. That's at J-S-N-Y-N-G. And Brad is at Meester Idle. That's at M-E-E-S-T-E-R-I-D-L-E. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.